Well, I'm going to be honest with you guys. I kind of hit that wall that I feel like we all hit in December, and I'm just tired. And I think, like, I don't know about you guys, but for me, like, I always forget that, you know, after you do all the fun stuff, like you put on the lights on the tree and you get all the decorations out and you get, like, the first taste of Christmas cookies and whatnot, then you just have to run through a gauntlet that is December, that is just nonstop, just, like, busy work schedule hecticness. And I was kind of reminded of this because I was like, well, what would a December schedule look like? And I was like, well, let's go ask AI, right? And so then ChatGPT made me this, and I thought this was funny because part of it, like, nothing's even, like, actually spelled right in there, and I like to just imagine that's just because that's how hard this month is. I did at one point, though, ask, I was like, listen, ChatGPT, this is really great, but you only put, like, one thing on here at a time. That's not how this works. You got to be able to put multiple things on a day because that's how crazy December is, and ChatGPT is like, are you crazy? And I was like, dude, I don't make the rules. This is just what December is. And so, like, I as Arthur and I were talking, he was like, you know, this week, Jimmy, we're supposed to preach on the idea of peace. And, like, I don't know how to actually embody this because, like, when I look at my own calendar, I'm just over inundated with stuff. And I think this is right because I think for you and for me, when we look at our calendars, it feels busier this time of year than it is any other time of the year. But here's the wild thing. The wild thing is the fact that, like, I did do a little bit of research and I found out that, like, we only average 1 to 3 more social events in this month than we do any other month of the year. And that doesn't feel right, but it's actually what the data says, is that it's really only maybe on average topping out at, like, 1 extra thing per week. But here's what the research doesn't show, is the research can't really quantify, like, all the other stuff that's going on, because it's not just the social events, right? It's the, we got to make the Christmas cookies. It's the, we got to go buy gifts. Now we got to wrap the gifts. Now we got to go mail the gifts. It's, we got to make sure we spend time watching all the movies and stuff that we can't watch any other time of the year. And all of a sudden, everything just starts to just stack up on itself. Me, like, I'm realizing that some of this stuff, it's just self-inflicted. Right, my wife and I, we did a thing for my son last year where we were like, oh, let's do this really cute thing where we will wrap up 24 different Christmas kids books, and he can unwrap a book every day of the month, and then we can read that book to him for bedtime. That'll be, like, really cute. It'll be like, you know, if the Scholastic Book Fair had a baby with an advent calendar, and, like, Max will get to benefit from it. And it sounds great, right? And I loved it. And then this year he was like, we're doing that again, right? And I was like, we sure are, right? And so now I've got to wrap 24 books, and they're not even gifts. This is just, I've got to write 24 books for a bit. All right, and, like, that's just, it's just insane, like, how much stuff just gets thrown onto us. And again, the irony being that today we're supposed to talk about peace. Because in the second Sunday of Advent, we're supposed to talk about this idea of what it means for peace to come upon earth. And that is just the most ironic thing because this feels like the least peaceful time of the year. Because that same research I was talking about actually can quantify the fact that we are on average 30% more stressed during the month of December than we are the other 11 months. And so what's the response to that? And the response to that, honestly, is the fact that God made a promise to you and God made a promise to me. God made a promise that this world would be set right. And as we light those 4 Advent candles, each of those represents a part of that promise being restored in humanity. And so what we're going to look at today is, what does it mean for the promise of peace to have been brought to the earth? And we're going to do that by looking back at Isaiah, which is just one of the most famous passages that we love to look at when it talks about the prophecies that Jesus fulfilled. Where in the book of Isaiah in chapter 40, it says, "Why do you complain, Jacob? Why do you say, Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord? My cause is disregarded by my God. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary. Even young men stumble and fall, but those who trust and hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint." This is the promise of peace that God has made to the world. That that in our most tired, in our most weary, in our most weakened forms, that God will provide for us strength. God will provide for us wings like eagles so that we can rise above the most difficult moments and the most stressful moments of this earth. But here's what I love about this passage. This passage was written under the assumption that weariness just is going to be a thing. Because Isaiah is writing this to a group of people who are dealing with exile, and they're dealing with being conquered, and they're dealing with like not having their home and not knowing if God still loves them and God is still protecting them. And he's writing to them with this level of assurance. But what I wish Isaiah had done is I wish that Isaiah had written in there, and by the way, this is just never going to go away. In 2025, you're still going to be tired. Because the reality is that this is one of the most consistent universal themes. That you and I and everybody around us, we look at our calendars at this time of the year and we go, how can we possibly put anything else in this? And more importantly, how are we possibly going to get through what we already have? This is the universal truth, I think, when it comes to peace, where we look at peace and we just think that is a pipe dream that's never going to actually apply to me because my calendar would never possibly allow it. But it's actually why I think that like Christmas movies have this beautiful ability to, I kind of think, cut through that mentality. And there's a specific type of Christmas movie that I think is particularly gifted at this. And it's really funny because 3 years ago, I preached on this specific type of Christmas movie, and this is a Hallmark Christmas movie. And Hallmark movie being, I guess, like a genre of movie, of just like cheesy romantic Christmas movies. And something like this, right? Merry Christmas. It's absolutely ridiculous. And we'll talk about that here in a sec. But 3 years ago, I did this sermon, and to this day, people still talk about how it was their favorite sermon I've ever preached. Not like one on Easter, not one on like overcoming temptation with the power of Jesus. No. I love the time that you talked about, you know, Hallmark Christmas movies for like 20 minutes because Arthur didn't want to do it one day, and you know, here we are. And so it's really funny to me because the irony is that as true as the sermon was that I preached 3 years ago, it is just as true today, which is that as much as we love to make fun of Hallmark Christmas movies, they have a fundamental truth to them. And they have a fundamental truth because every Christmas movie by Hallmark is the exact same, right? It's always some big wig from the city, right? They come in from the big city and they go to a poinsettia farm town or whatever. And they fall in love with a strapping or beautiful person who lives there and runs the poinsettia farm or whatever. And then they rediscover the power of Christmas. And this one in particular is hilarious because this one is a sequel because apparently you couldn't finish the whole movie in one movie. You had to, you know, continue the story. And this one, you can very much realize that they are now just pandering to millennials because they're now getting Joey and Matthew Lawrence to come be a part of these things. Matthew Lawrence, of course, of Boy Meets World, and Joey Lawrence, who peaked when he said, whoa, on Blossom, right? Like that is... That's who's in this one. Now, what you need to understand is that in the original one, right, these girls were from the big city, and they were trying to figure out what they were going to do because their job had kept them so busy all the time. And then they met these guys, and they're like, what if we fall in love and we discover the true meaning of Christmas, right? And that is the point of every single one, because my new favorite one that my wife is really excited to watch and I can't wait to hear about is this next one that's called My Secret Santa. And My Secret Santa is this really hilarious one where the concept of this is this idea that this woman is a single mother, and she, we'll get to it eventually, it'll be fine. So it's this woman who's a single mother, and she is trying to figure out how to take care of her daughter. And so what she ends up doing is she ends up convincing this hotel to allow her to pretend to be a guy so that she can be Santa, which is literally the plot of She's the Man with Amanda Bynes. Again, they're just pandering to millennials at this point. But this idea that you've got this single mom who's so busy that the only way she can care for her daughter is by getting this Santa job, but hopefully along the way she'll rediscover the power and the meaning of Christmas. And as funny as those are, that's not just restricted to Hallmark movies. That's restricted to most Christmas movies. Because if you keep going to this next one, where you're going to look at Jingle on the Way, right? This is the main character in Jingle on the Way. Arnold Schwarzenegger is a guy by the name of Howard Townsend. And Howard, what do you think? He's from the big city. He works too hard. He doesn't pay attention to his family. And he's lost the true meaning of Christmas. But hopefully, through the magic of love and Christmas, he'll rediscover what's important in this world. And we can keep going, right? Because the next one, Elf. Well, the main character in Elf totally understands. The other character in Elf, Walter Hobbs, he works too hard. He neglects his family. But hopefully through the power of Christmas, he can rediscover what's important in life. What about Santa Claus, right, with Tim Allen? Well, Tim Allen, he was Santa Claus. He was a good dad. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you know what? His ex-wife and her new husband, right? What is it? They work too hard. They're ignoring their son. They don't believe in the power of Christmas, but hopefully through the magic of the season, they can remember what's important to them. Miracle on 34th Street. Doris Walker ignores her daughter and tries to literally put Santa Claus on trial because she works so hard, she's forgotten what's truly important. But hopefully through the power and the magic of Christmas, she can remember why everything is truly matters. And my favorite example of this actually is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, because here, he does not work too hard, right? But you know what he does do? He pays too close attention to Christmas that he's neglecting his family. But hopefully through the power and magic of Christmas, he can remember what's truly important in this time. This is this hilarious universal truth that you and I are both just so busy that we fail to believe in the things that we need to believe in. We fail to recognize and pay attention to the things that we need to pay attention to. And the funny thing about it is the reason why this is a trope that just continues to pop up in movie after movie after movie is because you and I watch that deep down secretly hoping that there is an answer in there for us come January. We secretly hope that there's an answer for how we can navigate life when we get beyond the Christmas season. How do we navigate the busyness? How do we navigate the tiredness? How do we navigate the weariness? Because I don't know how to handle the difficulty that is this world. Because the reality is, this world doesn't have any good answers. Right? Because the answer to this world, they'll just show you, well, you just need to slow down. Here's the deal. The world's not slowing down, though. So it's somebody telling me to slow down doesn't actually solve anything other than, you know, it's like a car that's going too slow on the highway. Like eventually somebody is just going to get hurt. It's not a good strategy. Oh, well, maybe you just need a vacation. Yeah, but you and I both know that like vacations only involve us having to work to the bone for 2 weeks straight leading up to the vacation to almost like earn the right to be able to take some time away and to not feel like we're just gonna fall behind on everything. And then we spend the week on vacation pretending like we're not checking our phones, but we really are. And then we get back into the office and then we have to work double time to try to catch up on everything that we missed. The reality is that there is no true good answer in this world for how to navigate the weariness and the brokenness. But this is where Jesus comes into play, because the promise of Jesus was the idea that there was going to be peace in the midst of the struggle, that there was going to be an answer to the universal truth that we were going to be tired. Because here is what Jesus himself says when he is gathered with his disciples shortly before he ends up being arrested and put to death himself. It says, then Judas, not Judas Iscariot, which I love that the writer was like, just not that one, said, but Lord, why do you intend to show yourselves to us and not to the world? Jesus replied, anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. Anyone who does not love me will not obey my teaching. These words you hear are not my own. They belong to the Father who sent me. And then he keeps going, all this I have spoken while still with you, but the Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all the things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. You heard me say I'm going away and I'm coming back to you. If you loved me, you would be glad that I am going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. I have told you now before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. This isn't like some hokey answer. This isn't some like trade secret. This is him literally saying the world has an answer for peace and it's always going to fail you. It's always going to be temporary. It's always going to be fleeting. It's never going to be fulfilling. But I'm going to give you peace in a much deeper and real sense. I'm going to give you a peace that cuts through everything and provides for you a true gift. Because just like we talked about last week, we talked about how there's this promise of hope, and in this promise of hope, we receive this gift of healing. What we realize is that there's this promise of peace, and in this promise of peace, what we've been truly given is we've been given rest. And we know this because Jesus is telling his disciples this in a moment when everything is about to go horrible for him. And what he's going to do in the midst of that, right in the face of everything about to go horrible for him, is he's going to sit and he's going to pray and he's going to take an opportunity to rest. And what he's showing to his disciples is this idea that the peace that he is leaving in this world is not built around circumstance. It's not built around whether or not everything is going well for us. It's not built around whether or not we have too much on our plates in this moment. I think about how easy it is to get lost in the things that we're working on. I'm thinking about, like, there's all these teams right now that are waiting, that within the next couple hours they're gonna find out in college football, like, are they going to the playoffs? Are they not going to the playoffs? And like it's just this crazy moment where, like, as a coach, their coach is probably telling them all these little different platitudes and all these little like pithy sayings. And what they really actually need is, like, listen, you can't control what's going on in this world. And the only true peace you're going to get is not within some little hokey phrase or something. It's going to be actually through Jesus. And the reason we believe this is because this is a peace that came and is of God himself. It's not something that allows us to remove things from our calendar. But it's a peace that actually looks at our calendar and says, I can put the presence of God in it. Because here's what I know about God. I know that God has provided peace. I also know that God himself has rested. And I also know that God is constantly at work in this world trying to bring you and to me into a deeper relationship with him. And so one of the two things needs to be true. Either God is not actually constantly working and not actually constantly doing stuff, or God doesn't actually have peace. Or God is creating a way that we can't comprehend here on earth because of how we see the world. That if we see peace as something that's a gift from God, we realize that it is actually something that has the ability to be divine. It has the ability to go outside of this earth. Where we can begin to see that any peace that we think we can get on this earth is circumstantial. And God's has the ability to be steady. We can see that any peace that we think we can get in and of this earth is built around our ability to finish a to-do list, where the peace of God has the ability to exist in the midst of the work that we're currently doing. That the peace of God is something that is everlasting, while the peace of this earth is going to be feeble and frail and broken and just leave us wanting more. And the question for you and me is, we just have to decide which of those two do we truly want. Do we want to commit ourselves to the control of this world, to our calendars, to our schedules, and thinking that if we can just get to the other side of it, then we'll have peace? If we can just get to the other side, then everything will slow down. Do we want to continue to tell ourselves that lie, or do we want to embrace this idea that God is providing for us a fulfillment of the promise in Jesus Christ, that there would be peace on this earth, that we would run and not grow weary anymore? And the secret to doing this honestly is to do exactly what Jesus said, which is to obey and follow the commands of Jesus. Obey and follow the commands of God. And so for you and for me, when we ask, well, how is it that I can embrace this peace? We begin to realize that we have to live like the faithful people who've gone before us have lived. We look to those people in our lives and we go, that was the most faithful person I think I've ever met. How do I live a little bit more like them? And here's the challenge that I think I'm going to give to myself this week. And if you need one, I will invite you to do the same with me. And I'm going to steal this from an incredibly faithful guy who helped raise me up kind of through the seminary process. And he said he would start every day looking at the day and asking, where am I going to see God in this day? Before the day began, before the schedule was about to grind him up and spit him out, he would look at that and say, yeah, but before you get a hold of me, where am I going to see God in the midst of you? taking away the idea that this schedule had power over him, and instead saying, God is the only thing that truly has power in this world, and bluntly, I'm going to give myself to God through the midst of it, and that's how I'm going to find peace. That's how I'm going to find rest in the midst of all the chaos, in the midst of all the work that I have to do. And so for you and for me, for the next 7 days, what I want to encourage us to do is, yeah, start each day, pull up your calendar on your phone, and begin by looking that calendar in a sense of prayer and asking God, God, where are you going to show up for me over the next 24 hours? Where can I intentionally look for you? May you provide to me peace in the midst of the chaos that I'm about to endure so that I might find rest in the midst of it, so that I may run and not grow weary, that I may walk and not grow faint. Let's pray. Gracious and loving God, you came into this world and you demonstrated to us what true faith looks like. And so in the midst of that, God, I ask that you make yourself and your presence known to us. God, I ask that you provide to each of us an example of faithful living so that we might experience true peace in the midst of this world. That we might experience rest in the midst of the work. That we would realize that this schedule, these calendars, pale in comparison to the power of you. It's in your holy and blessed name we pray. Amen.